You probably know of Bill Kristol, not the comedian, the neoconservative, liberal-turned-conservative, who's been a leading critic of President Trump, who's returned the favor. Well, this past weekend, after Republicans refused to vote for witnesses in the impeachment trial, Kristol tweeted out, "Not presumably forever, not perhaps for a day after November 3rd, 2020, not on every issue or in every way until then, but we are all Democrats now." Really? He served in Republican administrations, founded the conservative Weekly Standard, was a fierce supporter of the war in Iraq, an opponent of Bill Clinton's health reform, is now editor-at-large of the conservative site The Bulwark, and chair of the new Project for the Republican Future. A Democrat? Bill Kristol joins us from New York. Welcome.
Thank you.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that until November 3rd, 2020, at the presidential level at least, the attempt, which I was involved in, to recruit a strong Republican challenger to Donald Trump has failed. So if you want to replace Trump as president, it's going to be by a Democrat.
What was the tipping point for you? Was it Senator Lamar Alexander, for instance, calling out the president's actions in Ukraine, as you write in The Bulwark, saying they were wrong, but then saying he's not going to vote for witnesses or conviction?
I think I had a series of sort of mini tipping points, which added up to one big one. I mean, Trump turned out to have such a stranglehold on the party. And we saw that in the House on the impeachment vote, where, again, I thought, OK, they're mostly going to stick with Trump. But 10 or 20, I think, would desert. And as happened with Nixon, didn't happen. Then in the Senate, thought, OK, you know, there are people who are retiring, who have pretty distinguished careers. Do they want to go down with this ship? And the fact that they're all rationalizing now a vote to acquit, pretty hard for me to look anyone in the eye, honestly, and say, hey, let's join me in the fight to save the soul of the Republican Party. So the combination of what's happened in the country in terms of there being no credible challenger to Trump and what's happened with the congressional Republicans, especially on impeachment, but not only on impeachment, incidentally, the general justification of Trump and the acceptance of Trumpism is almost as bad as the acceptance of Trump, the kind of degeneration of everyone's rhetoric into Trump-like rhetoric.
Well, you have called him in your different writings loathsome, a con man, a charlatan, a demagogue, someone soiling the robe of conservatism. But I presume you see all the headlines laying the blame for all of this right at your feet. Here's one. Jacob Weisberg and Slate, who killed the responsible Republican? Bill Kristol, of course, is that headline. And he referred to when Bill Clinton was trying to pass universal health care in 1993. You wrote several kind of scorched earth memos telling Republicans not to work with Democrats on any social or economic legislation. Some people point to that and say, you're the one who started this idea that Republicans who were known for working good government should no longer cooperate with another party.
I mean, at times I've been tactically certainly against cooperation and who hasn't been in politics, and maybe at some of those times I was wrong. But I think I have a pretty good record in foreign policy especially, and including under President Obama, of trying to find times to support Democratic presidents when they did the right thing. We supported Bill Clinton in Bosnia. We supported the surge in Afghanistan, though I had my doubts about how serious President Obama was in carrying through and so forth. So I think on those kinds of issues, I've tried not to be simply a scorched earth opponent. There are times I went further than I should have, I now think in retrospect. But I don't think I've ever descended to the kind of level of personal invective that Trump routinely does.
Well, but as you know, we have The New Yorker's Benjamin Wallace Wells, who wrote in 2018 that your political views, shaped by the end of the Cold War, a generation that thought the country could handle populism, a conservative turn on immigration without succumbing to nativism or demagoguery, but it did. Then there's John Schwartz in the
Well, but let me just interrupt
on
that.
All right.
I mean, what is the alternative? To say that there's no position that can accommodate anyone's concerns on any populist issue, and that if you were for – I mean, I actually am quite liberal on immigration. But I do think being able to say that there are some problems with, you know, unrestricted immigration isn't a crazy thing to say. But it's really important then to draw the line at nativism and xenophobia and bigotry. And I've tried pretty hard to draw that line.
Yeah. Well, you have. But I guess the writing that I'm referring to now isn't as much about what you did, but what you might have set the stage for unwittingly. And that brings us to Jonathan Schwartz in The Intercept. Who writes, I mean, this is going to be in the Wayback Machine for a lot of people, but some of us remember, post-Watergate, there was a feeling among some conservatives that no Republican would ever be forced from office again, despite, you know, how Nixon's sins were indefensible. It was Republicans who told him to step down. It was a largely Republican-appointed Supreme Court who decided he had to turn over his damning and, frankly, crude tapes. But there was another group that agreed when Nixon said, we need to create a new establishment. Some pledged they would construct a system of conservative media led by Fox. They'd have carefully picked judges to ensure no president would get impeached. Foundations that supported people like you and your father before you. And Jonathan Schwartz goes on to write that now, like a small amount of bacteria exploding exponentially on a patient with a weakened immune system, this conservative counter-establishment has taken over the host organ and become the establishment. I mean, do you agree with that view that this
no.
stage was set 30 years ago for this?
Ludicrous. I was 21 years old when Nixon was impeached, and I was on the side of impeaching him, so I don't know what I had to do with that. But no, the conservative counter-establishment was mostly a healthy counter-establishment, unless the left's view is that there should be no one on the other side. You want a conservative counter-establishment. You don't want a bigoted, xenophobic conservatism. Maybe we haven't done as good a job as we might have in fighting that at every stage, but we've certainly tried to. You know, I was for kicking Pat Buchanan out of the Republican Party.
Yep.
I said I would not support Ron Paul in 2008 or 2012 if he won the Republican nomination.
But you were right that you broke, for instance, with Roger Ailes. But before that, you worked with Roger Ailes to build an empire that frankly spreads disinformation. And now you have a Republican base that won't even look at outlets like the Washington Post or CNN that you appear in and on. You have said that maybe the party didn't do enough to fight this demagoguery and this division that has kind of brought us to this place that you hate right now with Donald Trump.
No, I think that's a fair criticism. I just think one has to go through and say what exactly could have been done at different stages. And there's some tough judgment calls. I wrote for the New York Times in 2008. So I'm not one who has tried to just stay in the conservative ghetto. The Weekly Standard was a magazine that had an awful lot of liberal readers and may try to make arguments to liberals and publish some liberals. And certainly on the cultural side was much more eclectic. So I'm not – look, I made mistakes. But on the whole, unless you want to take the position, which some people do on the left, that the entire conservative movement for 50, 60 years, that was all illegitimate. Mm-hmm. All of that was just a precursor to Donald Trump. Unless you want to take that position, I think you have to say that there's a respectable conservatism. There's a degenerate form of conservatism. Some of us might have drawn the line at slightly different places of where that was. I mean, I feel comfortable, I guess I would say, and I feel even proud of having worked for Reagan and George H.W. Bush and having opposed Buchanan and having opposed various forms of bigotry in the Republican Party.
Yeah. And again, we're not talking about some of those things you mentioned. We are talking about the building of this infrastructure that's been the springboard for disinformation and for divisiveness that have somehow led to this place that we are, that you have expressed your unhappiness with. Where does it go from here, Bill Kristol? I mean, where do you see the Republican Party going?
Nowhere good in the next during 2020. And then the question is, can it be saved afterwards? Trump has to be defeated. Even then, I think I'm much more pessimistic than I was a couple of years ago that it would be easy or even maybe possible to get beyond Trump. So I am genuinely open-minded about where I would be. Maybe we'll end up with three parties. Maybe we'll all become Scoop Jackson Democrats again. That's what I started off as in the 70s. And I don't mean that in a flip way. I think it's a new moment. It would be foolish not to rethink things. I'm trying to rethink some conservative orthodoxies. I think a lot of intelligent people on the left are rethinking some liberal orthodoxies. And so I'm very honestly just agnostic about what the future looks like. I do think in the short term, I think a second term of Donald Trump is very dangerous.
Last quick question. Can the Republican Party be rebuilt, repaired, without deconstructing some of this infrastructure we just talked about? Not, of course, losing media outlets that might have a more conservative bent, but those that disseminate lies. I don't know how that happens. But
well, that's the question, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, it's a free country. And so I left Fox, but I can't shut down Fox. And I don't think we want a country where that would be easy to do. The Weekly Standard, the magazine I edited, basically was closed down by its owners because we were anti-Trump. So I don't think the problem is really the infrastructure at this point. The problem is Trump. The problem is the base, which has become infected with a kind of xenophobia and authoritarianism. And I will say this, the degree to which elite conservatives, though, have accommodated and rationalized Trump is very bad. So Fox News, They were not as crazy or as conspiratorial, certainly 10 years ago, 15 years ago, as they are today. They were just conservative mostly, with a sort of some Bill O'Reilly-type populism that was mostly rhetorical and semi-harmless, I would say, and certainly didn't have the kind of Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham edge of real bigotry, I don't think. But the Wall Street Journal editorial page, which was a very respectable page, the degree to which it, for example, has rationalized conspiracy theorizing and Trumpism, that has been a bit of a shock for me. And so I don't disagree with what I think is kind of underlying some of your questions, which is that conservatism as a whole has more rethinking to do than just getting rid of Trump. The conservative elites have turned out to be much more susceptible to the appeal of a winning demagogue, much more driven by just hatred of the left than by affection for certain principles and a certain vision of the country. And that's been that has been a little startling to me and a little distressing to me, and something we need to confront, I think.
Bill Kristol, editor-at-large of the conservative news and opinion website The Bulwark, thank you so much for coming. Look forward to speaking to you again.
Yeah, I do too. Thanks.
By the way, Bill Kristol has said he made a mistake in pushing Sarah Palin for VP, still believes the Iraq War was right, and as we heard, for now is a Democrat.